gold would be our power. Another foolish thing.
He knew that they could go ahead and cover up an email investigation, which would have led to a very serious president. So, on a side note, I was hoping this.
Anything to do with the attack of 9/11? Do you believe in a conspiracy in terms of the attack of 9/11?
No, but I do believe that it is the first time in history that fire has ever melted steel. I do believe that it defies physics for the World Trade Center Tower 7, Building 7, which collapsed in on itself. It is impossible for a building to fall the way it fell without explosives being involved. World Trade Center 7. World Trade 1 and 2 got hit by planes. 7, miraculously, the first time in history, steel was melted by fire. It is physically impossible.
And who do you think is responsible for that?
I have no idea. But to say that we don't know that it imploded and it was an implosion and a demolition is beyond ignorant. Look at the films. Get a physics expert here from Yale, from Harvard. Pick the school. It defies reason.
Let's get one. Because that is the unthinkable.
It is the unthinkable. But imagine if somebody could convince you of that, could prove it to you, Elizabeth. Just 7.
I don't think it would happen.
Oh, good. So with Oprah in the news, I thought I'd go to Rosie O'Donnell on The View.
Well, there are many, many ways to think of it, but historically, have governments ever faked incidents or incited incidents in order to get them into wars?
I'm sure it has.
I don't think
this is the case right here. I don't think that there was a conspiracy between Bush and Tony Blair to put these soldiers in as pawns so that we can jump into Iran. I think we're going to try to use other methods to stop their program.
There's an admiral who asked that we use diplomatic methods to get out of it, and that's where I wish that we would. I mean, I wish everybody would exercise diplomacy and compromise, and sometimes you have to give something up in order to achieve something better, peace. Sometimes you have to do that, and it seems like it's those ideologies that are not being talked about enough. What would a diplomatic compromise be? What would a diplomatic summit be here?
And it's just very hard in America when anyone from the Mideast has been so demonized that no matter what, it's impossible for some people to believe that the Iranians in any way could ever do anything ethical in any capacity. That they've somehow been dehumanized to the point where they're not people, who they're just the enemy. They're terrorists.
I'll tell you what Rosie O'Donnell was talking about. Oprah refused to host 9/11/01 hero William Rodriguez, with the last man out. Remember, he had the key to WTC. But this clip shows how pathetic. But another cowardly, warmongering stooge who looks nothing like me would be a relief. So that's my little commentary on an Oprah presidential campaign.
That mission is fucked now. NSA, security advisor. Are any of your colleagues pissed, or is everyone going along with this thing? This is okay. Bombing on the side of Al Qaeda. Kashmiri. Wahhabi. Qasem Army. It's a madhouse, says the security advisor. Hell, we even told the Russians an hour before impact. American soldier. Oh, of course. American soldier. Now, Boston says we chose to hit the Syrian airfield because it is where the chemical attack will launch from. Wow, can't they pick it up? Security advisor. They are. I mean, they picked it up.
It's so fucking evil. That's the American soldier. The security advisor says, amen. Now, Seymour Hersh provided this conversation to the, of course, you're not going to show who it was because you don't want them caught, okay? Back to the American soldier. This was April 8th, a couple days after we murdered a bunch of Syrians on the pretext that the death squads that we were supplying with chemical weapons were really their responsibility, I guess, for being socialist. You know, the post 9/11. Northwoods, PNAC, Pentagon's stand down, defense. defense holiday for NORAD to stand down for Pentagon drone strikes and 3WC demolitions.
And, of course, all Robert E. Lee party at the getaway, at the wheel in the getaway. So Obama hires the Clintons that were the Mina Coke stand attendants under Poppy Bush, the son of Hitler's banker, the Yanks who funded the rise of Hitler and, like, Ford inspiring anti-Semitism as part of the cannon fodder for the Holy Land Project. Oh, did I say Chicago? Oh, so last year, Dick Gregory died, and he talked about Chicago, most notably about the involvement of Jesse Jackson and the murder of Martin Luther King, getting a bag full of FBI money to change the room from 202 to 306, and then lying about it. That was Chicago, remember? Rahm Emanuel's Chicago.
So your brother's bound and gagged, and they've chained him to a chair. Won't you please come to Chicago just to sing? In a land that's known as freedom, how can such a thing be fair? Won't you please come to Chicago for the help that we can bring? We can change the world.
Julian Assange lost his Twitter account yesterday. It went down for a short period of time. When it came back up, it was very different in the sense that he was following 24 other people. So he caught the attention of the nation and worldwide that his account was taken down, but that it was gone. And then it came back up, and there was 24 more followers on it. And these 24 followers that he's following, which he usually only just follows WikiLeaks. So he was following a number of players, and these players appear to be possibly the suspects in the annex or the executive order, who they're going after with these asset seizures. Okay, so who was listed on that? Tons of United Nations. organizations, missions related to the organization. Pope Francis himself is on there. And so if you go onto Julian Assange's Twitter, you'll see that there are 24 organizations listed, and many of them are United Nations related, or they are Pope Francis himself, other members that are connected to the annex to the Clinton Foundation. And what we're seeing is that these people are going to be the next exposed layer. And this is an all-out war. Okay, we think that it's all just, you know, we're waiting for the fireworks in mid-January, but no, it's already very much in play. And how it's very much in play is that there literally is the threat of the UN troops going active on U.S. soil. And what's coming out more and more is that the UN army is actually the cabal deep state army. It is.
We're not talking about the Iranian people. We're talking about their government, who essentially has total control over them. They essentially have zero say in that.
That's how people see us, I hope, in the world.
That's right. Our government, right? People, I hope people across the world don't think what George Bush is doing represents the American people, because the last election showed it does not.
But let me ask you this. Like, what concerns me is that there's this environment now where we're almost more apt to trust our enemies than our allies. And that's very concerning to me.
Well, that is concerning when nearly everyone in
the Bush administration for that. They've completely annihilated all of our trust.
See, I trust our allies and I trust our government much more than I trust our enemies on the war on terror.
Wait, would you say, Elizabeth, that you trust the Bush administration as much as you did when he first took office?
Will you admit?
So, you know what? In a time of war, I think you are in a position where you have to...
Here in the dark, a dusty light is fading, the lonely night of waiting is passing the point and missing the mark. Either light or love will fade.
second bullet in the back of your or my head makes anyone calling it suicide guilty of aiding and abetting that murder, like our favorite 9/11-01 getaway drivers. We're doing 10 points down the dial from 104.1 FM when Lou Wolf mentioned my CIA whistleblower friend Jim Wilcott at the Gary Webb Freedom of the Press Award, along with the obvious about that murder, the second bullet in the back of Gary Webb's head. I'll try to dredge up some Dark Alliance reading before the end of today's show, because when they say dirt on Hillary, what they're talking about is the assassination campaign funded by the same people funding the election theft from the primary. And so let's go to killing the coworker here from the previous mouse report.
I know, it's a miracle. I still got the other one.
Oh, the flip phone?
Yeah, and then I'm going to film what I recorded onto that. But hey, it's called the Mouse Report. I'm DJ Mouse.
DJ Mouse.
Driving by. So people...
Yeah, they just want to check it out. I already told them that you're one of our friends.
Regular. Oh, thank you. Oh, that's so sweet. I won't tell anybody you said that.
Or I won't say that I sent a picture of the guy that shot up my camper after he said, if Saddam Hussein wins, I'll pepper your ass with my Mini 14. And there in the third from the front, when they had, 300 bikers in the first oil war rally in Fremont, they show up a couple dozen that night, and he's got to come out and threaten the protesters. And I take his picture. I put it up next to the bullet hole. That was September 22nd, because September 23rd, I sent a card to Bill Clinton and Janet Reno and said, if we want to have any success in solving this shooting, then you won't be cooperating, fooling with the CIA that has all this money to operate inside the country, executive order 12333. And, oh, so as I'm describing, you know, all this officer-friendly before, says, oh, a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, don't tell your
You'll friend. Get in trouble, believe me, you'll get in trouble.
Anyway, calling us, me, away. Their friend, was like because that. Somebody murdered Peter Herlin, the ordnance
That's
officer.
Our idea.
Did you put up posters this time or no?
Well, see, the one that I had put up, I'm going to take the other one down.
And somebody was shooting up the front of the military base as the guard did donuts in the parking lot. As if you can't tell which way a drive-by shooter. It was right after I filmed the military brat breaking my window. And then they go on to the base. The black sports car and the blue and white pickup mocked up to look like the ordnance officer that sent me the thank you letter for the picture of the biker third from the front in those. Anyway, he was a Harley Davidson employee, Greg Lugaris, and he's a henchman for the Crazy Dragons. This is this government front group that you're going to rally and you get to park your Harleys on the government base. Oh, what a badass. Ha ha ha. Never mind.
Have you helped?
I just had to restore my reputation after being called a friend. Because, I mean, I'm not on the side of the people killing their coworkers like Peter Herlin. So, flowers for Algernon, Palma, and Peter. Of course, they were arming both sides. Sweden, that is, but not Palma and not Carl Friedrich Algernon. They were investigating the arming of both sides, which is what, of course, the banksters from hell have done forever. We were founded the year after they abolished slavery in the UK and
so. Children in Yemen with white phosphorus today. You remember, have you hugged your kid today?
Yeah.
So that's from the old, have you killed kids in El Salvador today?
Oh.
My little cutesy from the horrible 80s. Let me turn this off so I don't accidentally.
For the last 2 weeks, you could go by the weapons station railroad crossing where my friend Brian Wilson lost his legs to the weapons train, and it says no WMD with the mushroom cloud zero with a WMD inside, and then it says no steel frame building falls in fire, no Afghan did it, idiots. We dropped the biggest WMD on Afghanistan since Nagasaki's on our allies in Syria. And then there's a question mark, exclamation point. What kind of prehistoric monsters are we, asked the Tyrannosaurus Rex.
To 5300 Port Chicago Highway. Military Ocean Terminal Concord.
Covert Action Bulletin, where I myself contributed a very important early documentary magazine that told the truth about U.S. intelligence and their operations abroad and at home. So here's Lewis Wolf.
Good afternoon. My name is Lewis Wolf. I'm one of the co-founders and co-editors and I was director of research of Covert Action Quarterly. It was formerly called Covert Action Information Bulletin. We published from 1978 to 2005. I truly wish we were still publishing. My God, we need it today more than ever. We were lucky enough to invite over 200 of the best journalists, investigative journalists, writers, investigators of the realities of U.S. imperialism, of U.S. empire around the world. And then as time went on during our 27 years, we decided we got to focus more back here in this country, because it's not only the home of the Central Intelligence Agency and the rest of the U.S. intelligence apparatus, but it's also emblematic of the issue, empire. The United States has over 1,000 bases around the world, all of them in place not to protect the people of this country, as they would pretend, but in place to protect American investments, American enterprises around the world, and also to generate a force of trained killers.
Let me ask you, we're here in Bob Perry's house celebrating investigative journalism. Bob Perry, obviously the author of Consortium News, and was celebrating the work of Gary Webb. Why was Gary Webb important? Why is investigative reporting more important now, if you think so, even than it was when you began?
Gary was a personal friend of mine and somebody who I really respected very highly. Somebody who dared to go where few journalists would go, and that was to investigate how the drug trade is run, how it functions within. And so his investigative journalism skills were really at on exhibit as he wrote his book, and then he was interviewed and became a worldwide celebrity as a result of his work. And but I have to say, I think it should go on the record that he did not commit suicide. I don't think there's any doubt of that, because I spoke to him 2 weeks before his death, and he was working on an article for Covert Action Quarterly, which I had been pressing him for some time to do. And he said, okay, I'm working on that. I promise you I'll get you that article done. Unfortunately, he met his maker, but it wasn't him killing himself, shooting himself in the back of the head twice. How do you do that? That's what the allegation was.
You can argue that part of it, but what's true is the...
Is that, and is it just called whistleblower Lou Wolf a liar? That was Gary Webb's boss. So when these cowardly stooges say, oh, he couldn't get a job, you just heard his boss describe the murder of his employee by the person interviewing him. Now, when Dennis interviewed me, as I was part of the Beatty 3 after climbing up on the axle of the worker bus at test site after the first Jim Crow coup here, he said, how do I know you? But he had interviewed me less than a year before when George Walker Bush was, when they drugged me out of the way of five lanes of El Camino Real, backed up as far as I could see. And so my question is, how do you know me, Dennis, when you pulled me out of the line at Jerry Brown's We the People, where I had handed him Jim Wilcott's, who was just mentioned, JFK assassination, a CIA insider's view? Last time I saw Maley Scott, she heard him say no when I asked Jerry Brown if he had read that. Anyway.
They really was an attempt to snuff out his spirit, as they often do.
Okay. Let us interrupt this in
different ways. Struggle,
killing
ends meet.
Killing his co-worker, that's what the Today Show is called. Killing his co-worker, Dennis.
That's a fact.
We're naming it after your
and corporate action, but what was the most...
Well, that was IndieBay.org uploads 2017 627 Killing Coworker MP3. So you can get the full show there, but
operandi.
Pumping the second bullet in the head of our friend and colleague. I talked to Gary Well. He knew I was suing the CIA.
Jim and Elsie Wilcott, the last three were former CIA officers.
Let's make that. We got a second job
and,
for you. You can do that too.
When I was pulled out of line, I mean, the woman behind me was allowed to ask a question, but the question on the floor was the connection between the drug running by the CIA, the subject of the forum at the We the People, and 1963, November 22nd. And so, obviously, the answer was George Herbert Walker Bush was involved in both of those, but I was not able to ask that question, because Dennis pulled me out of line. Before going on to help murder our colleague Gary Webb.
And we dedicated ourselves to really go after not just the CIA, but go after the truth behind the Phil A.G., Jim and Elsie Wilcott.
And Elsie was the first woman to testify against the CIA. A is for assassinated, a word I learned at 10, 1963. November 22nd, when the teacher ran down to the schoolyard. The next 10 years, millions more were assassinated after JFK's Vietnam withdrawal orders were canceled. Most of the weapons came from the Naval Weapons Station north of Concord. This, more than anywhere else, is where we have sanctioned these murders. Nowhere else have I been asked about spending hundreds of... But we're spending millions and billions. That was just hundreds of thousands for a Savimbian angle. Never mind.
I believe John Stockwell is still living.
But I was just repeating my why 3 years at the tracks about the JFK assassination, which was the subject of Jim Wilcott, who is mentioned here at the Gary Webb Award. Blah, blah, blah.
One of the writers,
nice.
Very nice,
no,
sweet, and very scholarly person.
Pumping,
he wasn't afraid to go where few others would tread in his work. You never saw Phil relaxing. He was always working. I used to know him.
Okay, let me back it up again, because I just cannot listen to murder going down under my eyes. And the, when I shoot myself twice in the head, as they will tell you, it isn't because I came back from the dead to do it. It's because they're lying, and they are shooting me that second time, obviously, but...
As time went on during our 27 years, we decided we got to focus more in this country, because it's not only the home of the Central Intelligence Agency and the rest of the U.S. intelligence apparatus, but it's also emblematic of the issue, empire. The United States has over 1,000 bases around the world. Somebody who dared to go where few journalists would go, and that was to investigate how the drug trade is run, how it's functions within. And so his investigative journalism skills were really on exhibit as he wrote his book, and then he was interviewed and became a worldwide celebrity as a result of his work. But I have to say, I think it should go on the record that he did not commit suicide. I don't think there's any doubt of that, because I spoke to him 2 weeks before his death, And he was working on an article for Covert Action Quarterly, which I had been pressing him for some time to do. And he said, okay, I'm working on that. I promise you I'll get you that article done. Unfortunately, he met his maker, but it wasn't him killing himself, shooting himself in the back of the head twice. How do you do that? That's what the allegation was.
You can argue that part of it, but what's true is they really was an attempt to snuff out his spirit, to, as they often do.
I can't stand you, Dennis, you lying sack of shit. You just called him a liar on your own show. You don't shoot yourself twice in the head because you're doing a good job chasing them down and then say he couldn't get hired in journalism when you're talking to the guy who had hired him in journalism. Who put Samori Marksman on the back cover in 1999, okay? They were taking down in voice listener-supported radio 10 points down the dial. Now, this was yesterday, okay? Lou Wolf mentioned my friend, Jim Nelson Wilcott. I don't want to get distracted too much because, of course, the story is the JFK assassination, the CIA insider review by Jim Wilcott. Kennedy assassination came as no great shock to most of the people at Tokyo Station in Japan, a Class A station of the CIA. It seemed a logical culmination of the steadily building anguish and discontent over the Bay of Pigs fiasco and commie sellout of the Kennedy administration. That was the prevailing sentiment. Okay, now, because Trump has business ties with Russia, you get all the mocking crew, you know, Russia bashing. Okay, because of this commie sellout theme that is America, founded the year after UK abolished the slave trade, so that's a deep state for you. Democracy means majority view, and 99% of the people were called the enemy, and now they've been whittled down to the 1% of this. No, we are the 99% because 1% survived from 15 million to 150,000.
Can you stay for a few minutes? Gary Webb is
anyway,
online
we
from San Jose, and if you want to stay and talk about this
I need some help here.
Gary Webb, are you there this morning?
And they were both against
good
slavery.
Morning.
Good morning to you.
How are you?
Very tired. Early out here.
I apologize. You're really nice to do this. We've had so many calls about this, is why we asked you to do it.
Well, I'm happy to talk about it.
I actually heard you on a radio station when I was in Detroit a couple weeks ago for about an hour talking about this. This is what it's all about. It's the San Jose Mercury News, and here's a front page piece on August the 18th, and it's the first of a three-part series. Tell us, in a couple minutes, what this is about.
It's about a drug ring that operated in San Francisco and Los Angeles in the mid '80s, and it was connected to a Nicaraguan anti-communist army called the FDN, which was one of the biggest groups that we know as the Contras, and it was selling cocaine in Los Angeles for the most part, but in other areas of the country as well, to the gangs, to the Crips and Bloods down in South Central Los Angeles. And they were taking the money and using some of it, I don't know how much, we haven't figured that out yet, to buy weapons for the Contras. I know it sounds crazy, I know it sounds like the wildest conspiracy theories, which is why all our supporting documentation for the thing is posted on the internet. And if anybody's interested, I can give you the internet address a little later on.
Yeah, we've got a from the Mercury News here, a big chart that you put together from the Sunday story. Did you write all this, by the way?
Yes, I did.
This is a chart that shows how the money left down around Colombia. And can you give us a little bit of this scenario on how these...
I'm not looking at a television right now, but is that the pipeline chart?
It is.
Yeah. Those were the various smuggling routes that the ring used starting in the late 70s up to the early 90s to get the cocaine into the country and to get the money, some of the money back out of the country. And it depend, you know, depending on the year and depending on how intense the police scrutiny was, which wasn't very for the most part. That those are the different routes they used. They used freighters. They used stolen cars. They would just fly the stuff in suitcases early on when you didn't bring very much in.
Let me read you the first one up here, which is right near Los Angeles. It says, mid-1970s, luxury cars stolen in California were driven to Nicaragua, where they were officially imported by the Nicaraguan military to avoid stiff excise taxes and sold to wealthy Managuans.
Right.
The second number, which is way down here in Peru, it says mid-late 1970s, Peruvian cocaine was smuggled to Panama, secreted in suitcases and shoes with false bottoms and carried into the U.S. by airline passengers. Points of entry included San Francisco, Los Angeles, Houston, and New Orleans. The third one is late 1970s to 83. Cocaine from the new Cali cartel in Colombia was loaded onto freighters owned by the Gran Colombian line. The freighters were offloaded in the ports of Los Angeles, San Francisco, Portland, and Seattle. Four, early 1980s, cocaine was flown from Colombia to the Bahamas, where it was loaded aboard small planes and flown into Miami. From there, couriers would take it to California aboard commercial airliners.
Right.
Now, I can go on about this, but where did you get the new information?
You know, it's been public record for 20 years almost. Well, it was just from court files. I mean, eventually, once in a while, they would catch one of these people. The DEA would file an affidavit and lay out what they knew about the drug ring's operations. And it came from, you know, a lot of stuff in National Archives, mostly. A lot of these old court cases. And then there were cases in Nicaragua, which laid out the smuggling routes through that country into the United States. So we had the back end of it as well.
Gary Webb, Jack Nelson is at the table. I do want to tell the audience something, because right over your head, you can't see that. Look up on that screen there when we have it. It looks like there's a crack in the window. But that's actually condensation on our window back here, because
yes, I can.
Jack Nelson asked a question.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask you, because I haven't read the series. It looks fantastic, but what about the CIA involvement in all of this? Is that
that part of the story deals with the FDN, that guerrilla army that I mentioned earlier.
Right.
That was, you know, as the Iran-Contra hearings documented pretty
right.
well, that was a creation of the CIA.
Right.
And we track the cocaine dealers who were running this operation all the way up the ladder to the couple of CIA agents that were actually running the FDN, Enrique Bermudez and Adolfo Calero. And let me tell you as a bit of background. Most of this information, or much of the information, came out at a trial in San Diego in March. One of the cocaine brokers, a guy named Danilo Blandón, who was the head of the Southern California operation, has been working for the U.S. government for the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the star witness in a cocaine trafficking trial for the DEA in San Diego. And a lot of this stuff came out under cross-examination when he was up on the witness stand, because, the defense was curious, to say the least, about his relationship with the Contras and the Crips. And unfortunately, they couldn't really get into a lot of it, because before the trial, the United States filed a motion asking that nobody be allowed to ask Mr. Blandón about his relationship with the CIA. And it was one of the most curious documents I'd ever seen. It said, if true, this matter would be classified, and if false, it shouldn't be allowed at the trial. So,
did you get any?
Really had a chance to quiz him in great detail about his relationship there.
Did you get any help at all out of the CIA?
During the investigation,
mm-hmm.
Absolutely not. They wouldn't even return my phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
I filed a Freedom of Information Act request for information on Blandón and his boss Norman Meneses. And I was told that they can't tell me anything because it's a matter of national security.
Gary Webb, where are you from originally?
My dad was in the Marines, so I'm from everywhere.
And how long have you been with the San Jose Mercury News?
I've been with the Mercury 8 years. I was with a Cleveland Plain Dealer 5 years before that.
Where did you go to college?
I went to college in Indiana for a year, and then I went to college in Kentucky.
We're at Indiana University?
Yeah, IU in Indianapolis, at Community College. And I had a scholarship there, and then my dad got transferred. And I ended up at Northern Kentucky University.
We're going to take a call in a moment, but in your stories also, you say that the Crips and the Bloods, the gangs in L.A. get involved in this. How?
That's the back end of the deal. That's who was buying the cocaine, and they were buying cocaine and they were buying weapons from these fellows.
How much? Can you give us some sense of how big this thing is?
One of the guys that talked to me was the guy who was buying it, a fellow named Freeway Rick Ross. He was the biggest crack wholesaler in Los Angeles during the 1980s.
But another guy who talked to Gary Webb was DJ Mouse. Told him about his lawsuit against the CIA way back when. But the part I wanted to point out was where Danilo Blandón, he just mentioned, is talking to Rafael Cornejo, whose girlfriend hooked Gary Webb into the story on the asset forfeiture, because he was covering Sacramento for the San Jose Mercury News, And she says, look at all this paperwork. My boyfriend was working for the government. And when Danilo Blandón approached her boyfriend to get him to do that scene in The Godfather, keep the smack in the black neighborhood, he said, listen, don't play me with that black thing. Because Danilo Blandón says, why don't you get involved with the black thing? Nobody cares if they kill each other. And he said, don't play me with that black thing. Business is business, but don't play me with that black thing. And in Nicaragua, these white, you know, rich elites may think that way, but this is San Francisco, where we're too homogenized to run that kind of bull over us. So anyway, that's a little bump in the road to the Contra war that goes on. The dirt on Hillary is that assassination campaign, Honduras, Nicaragua, you get the idea, Libya, Syria.
And he says, well, he and Danilo Blandón have both said that, you know, at their peak, they were doing 100 kilos a week. And that's just with one dealer. You know, I don't know how much Blandón was selling to other people, but with Rick Ross, he was selling at least 100 kilos a week by 1984, 1985.
Let's take a call, and Jack Nelson's here at the desk with us, and we'll ask both of you gentlemen to get involved. Wilmington, Delaware, go ahead, please.
Good morning. I'm a little nervous because this is my first time.
That's all right.
Hearings when Ollie North and President Reagan and all those other people were having this war in Nicaragua. This information came out then, but it was just, you know, put under the rug. But it was a well-known fact at the time that the CIA was using gangs in California and various parts of the country, black groups, and they would bring drugs into the United States, and they are part of the reason why the drug situation is the way it is today, because they infiltrated the country with all these drugs so that they could get the money, because Congress would not appropriate money for us to carry on that war in Nicaragua.
Where is
so
it?
So they had to get money from someplace to finance the war.
But what about right now, though? What do you think the situation is? I ask all of you, what's the status of this kind of drug running today? Gary,
well, I don't know what the situation is now, but the CIA is one of the reasons why the situation is what it is today.
All right, thanks, caller. Mr. Webb, what do you say about today?
Whether this liaison exists today?
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I found that these guys were buying and selling from the same sources up until 1992, when Blandón was finally arrested by the DEA. So, I mean, it was going on at least until 92.
What do you think?
My guess is not. I mean, I can't believe, for example, that Judge William Webster, who I've known for a long time, who was CIA director, would not have tried to put a stop to anything like that when he was CIA director, and that Mr. Deutsch, the current
you
CIA director, I can't believe that he would put up something.
Well, no, I'm not saying that the CIA is necessarily involved in.
No, I know you're not. I know you're not saying that. Yeah.
You don't
but I'm just saying, I don't think so. That was
an
answer to
right
Brian's
away
question. I know you didn't say that, Gary.
In some later items here on your pipeline chart, it says in the late 1980s, Colombian cocaine was flown aboard private planes into small airfields in northern Costa Rica and southern Nicaragua.
And shipped in by Colombian freighter, known as the Frogman case. Seth Rosenfeld, of course, covered the fact that Russinello gave the Contras their coke money back when they said, we're using it to assassinate socialists.
Super DC-3s leaving from San Jose, Costa Rica, loaded with general merchandise, would touch down briefly, take on a cocaine load, and continue on to U.S. airports.
That's the same business that Daphne Galizia just got gladioed in, because Malta was where Silkway Airlines, remember the Bulgarian shipping companies shipping arms to the terrorists and using diplomatic immunity. So Obama was 2000, whenever it was, he okayed their charter in the U.S. There's all that to cover up. Not that the BBC is doing anything but, throwing the, cover over the truth when they are going after the particulars of the particular Malta prime minister and the direct connections there. It's to send a chilling message to the press. You know better than looking into the charming of terrorists by the West that is going on. And
that came out of the trial down in Nicaragua. Norwin Meneses, the guy who was running this drug ring.
Thanks. Springfield, Missouri, you're next.
Yeah, Brian, I'm really disappointed in you. I really am. The whole theme of this is that the CIA was bringing or was supplying the Contras with guns and financing it off of drugs. Is that the theme? And the only source we have for this is some questionable character. This is like the Gary Sick thing all over.
Thank you for reminding us about Gary Sick. Of course, he was writing about the October surprise. He was on the inside when Carter's national security traitor, Robert McFarlane, slipped off the Casey gang that they were going to get the hostages out before that operation. In 1978, Reagan, Thatcher, and Bush in Tehran, and the Shah, or the embassy, is saying, the Shah says it's looking like an opposition rally. And, of course, they told the military to stand down. We have to get these medieval nutcases in charge. So the third branch of the Abrahamic child abuse cult is, like, ostensibly ruling things. But a little more complicated than that. But, anyway, this caller just reminded us about the October surprise. And, of course, he's saying, you mean the CIA that has Klaus Barbie, when he was arrested by the French in 83, believe me, he said, I'm just a good American of German extraction who was only doing his job. Got my own sponsors, over all I sponsor it to the
Legend Cook. Let me, have you read the series?
No, I have not.
Well, that's not the only source. That's the only source we've talked about.
That's the only source you've talked about.
Right. We had like seven or eight independent sources on this stuff. And contemporaneous...
Yeah, well, you haven't provided any names.
Pardon?
No names.
Well, where do you want me to start?
Well, start.
You've got Sergeant Tom Gordon, who filed an affidavit in Los Angeles in 1986.
Was I correct on the theme of this whole thing, that the CIA was supplying the Contras with guns and financing the whole thing off?
Yes, you dimbrick, because you're a little imbecile, but let me just cut to the chase. Remember when Deutsch went to L.A. and Maxine Waters was fuming because all of this was coming out, and he said, well, there was an agreement between William French Smith and William Casey not to worry about narcotics violations. In other words, the selective enforcement of laws against murder, rape, and pillage have been the story. Since day one, how could anybody be surprised?
Off of drugs?
No, that's not correct.
Well,
they were certainly supplying with guns. They weren't financing the whole thing off of drugs. They were financing part of it off of drugs.
Part of it. Well, part's even bad, but...
Well, I tend to agree.
But I don't know. I'm disappointed in Brian. He puts experts on for scandals. He hadn't put any experts that know about scandals for Clinton, 80 scandal. Still, I mean, he's back in the past.
Hold on just a second.
Well, I tell you,
let me,
I don't
Gary
think
Webb,
that community in Los Angeles thinks it's a stupid scandal.
Let me just tell the caller why this gentleman's on here. It's because caller after caller kept calling up and referring to this whole subject. It seems the first thing you do is you go to the source and ask what it's all about. And then we can continue talking about this. I don't blame you for being upset. We can't deal with this thing in 15 minutes. That's
from the White House is it to put this. You back.
Oh,
Well, listen, CNN is not going to probably tell you the truth, but we'll go run this out a little more.
Let's talk some more about your sources on this thing, and who will not talk. Who just absolutely won't talk?
We filed Freedom of Information Act requests with the CIA, and as I said, those were denied on national security grounds. We filed them with the DEA, and for the first time in my life, I think, the DEA came out and said, no, we don't want to give you any records because we're concerned about invading the privacy of these drug dealers, so we don't want to tell you about them. So they didn't give us anything. The FBI sent me a letter saying it might be 2 years before they get around to answering my request. The INS has never responded. The State Department has gotten the stuff and never responded. I mean, these have been filed for like 6-8 months. And then we tried asking the DEA questions, and we couldn't get any answer from them. The only thing the CIA says is it's ludicrous, which, you know, I'll be the first to agree. The idea of them selling drugs to the Contras, for the Contras and the Crips is ludicrous, but everything we saw said it was true.
Let's grab a call from Dayton, Ohio. Go ahead, please.
Hi. The one question that no one's asked yet, and I'm going to ask it and see if this guy gives us an honest answer. Were these drugs targeted to black people?
I don't think they were targeted like in the manner that you mean. They were targeted in so far as, you know, Danilo Blandone, the man who was sent to Los Angeles to sell these drugs, he had a master's degree in marketing. That was his job before the revolution. He was in charge of setting up wholesale markets for Nicaraguan agricultural produce. He came to the United States and testified. And he isn't the only one that says this, but he said this under oath while a government witness. He wasn't trying to beat a rap. He wasn't trying to reduce a sentence. He's a free man. And he came into court and testified to this under oath. And what he said was that he was schooled in San Francisco in the drug trade. It took him 2 days to teach him how to become a cocaine dealer. He went down to Los Angeles and didn't know what to do. And when you talk to his friends and you look at the documents that exist, what happened apparently was, you know, the guy's a marketing expert. He looked around, he saw where it wasn't being sold, and went to sell it there. I mean, I think it was as simple as that, and I don't think anybody really cared particularly where he got the money as long as he got it.
We're going to get time for at least one more call.
DJ Mouse here. Gary, I know you're dead, but do you think that maybe the fact that this was before you wrote the book, that had that conversation between Danilo Bandone and Rafael Cornejo, however you came up with that little anecdote, I mean, that's the answer to the caller's question. Yes, it is deliberately in the hands of the racists that we were opting to support, and there's no coincidence about that. Founded the year a UK court banned the slave trade, that's the US of a-holes.
I want to ask you, because the caller who was upset about this being set up by the White House, let me bring in the MENA, Arkansas story that the Wall Street Journal spent a lot of time on.
Well, we wrote about that the other day.
How does that fit in with all this? I mean,
MENA was part of a parallel operation that was going on the East Coast, which is why, if people think they've heard about this before, it's because they heard about the East Coast pipeline when it was uncovered back in 85 and 86.
But I want to make the connection with the current president. He was supposedly involved as a governor?
Well, he was governor while this was going on. Whether or not he knew about it is something I don't think has been proven yet.
Let me ask Jack Nelson about this. Do you pay attention to that MENA, Arkansas story?
Well, we've written what was there, but, I mean, there's no indication that Clinton as governor had anything to do with it. I mean, it's been written about with all sorts of speculation by a lot of right-wing publications, but I've never seen anything that indicated any complicity on the part of the president.
Gary Webb, if people want to get a copy of this, I understand that you have reprints for MENA, a small
Arkansas
fee.
I think
this base was set up by George Bush and Oliver North and the CIA.
920-5999.
And they brought in plane load after plane load of cocaine there for sale in the United States. And then they took the money and bought weapons and took them back to the Contras, all of which was illegal, as you know, under the Boland Act. But tell me, did they tell you that this had to be in existence because of national security?
Well, let me answer the question. No, they didn't tell me anything about it. They didn't say anything to me about it. The airport in question and all the events in question were the subject of state and federal inquiries. It was primarily a matter for federal jurisdiction. The state really had next to nothing to do with it. The local prosecutor did conduct an investigation based on what was within the jurisdiction of state law. The rest of it was under jurisdiction of the United States attorneys who were appointed successively by previous administrations. We had nothing, zero, to do with it.
Okay, does zero sound like, oh no, there was state investigation, the local prosecutor, things that, of course, there is a law against conspiracy to murder. Anyway, back to Gary Webb, but...
Or you can download the whole thing from the internet, with all our documentation, with sound clips, so you can hear Danilo Blandone testifying to this in his own words, and you can get that at www.sjmercury.com/drugs. That's the best version, actually.
All right, let's do that one again so that people can write it down. www.sjmercury.com
SJMercury.
SJMercury.
.com/drugs.
Drugs.
Oh, I mean, I tried to stay as far out of partisan politics on this story as I could, just tell a story about a drug operation. We mentioned, obviously, that Reagan was in power when he authorized this secret war down there. But, you know, Clinton's in power now, and those are the folks who put Danilo Blandone on the federal payroll. I mean, the guy that brought crack to L.A. is now a federal government employee.
All right. Virginia Beach, Virginia, go ahead, please.
Yes. Concerning the Arkansas involvement in the drug thing, ever since 1986, Bill Clinton as governor did not ride herd on this thing. But all the drugs came through MENA, Arkansas. Everybody knows that and reads it in the papers. Barry Seal was doing it. Barry Seal was killed. Clinton didn't really have anything to do with it except he knew about it, gave auspice to it, wrote herd on it, and his government bond program received 10% of the profits, plus all the money was able to be laundered through Arkansas banks.
All right, thanks. Mr. Webb.
That's a lot of the allegations around MENA, and a lot of what she said is true, that Barry Seal was, I mean, he was one of the biggest drug dealers in the country at the time, and that's where he was based out of.
Mr. Nelson, Freedom of Information Act, has it made any difference?
Yes, in some cases it has. I mean,